And opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good evening, everyone. We are at KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. This is Shasta Unmasked. I'm Shay Stevens, here tonight with Dave Backus. And Ashley, are you on tonight?
There is no Ashley.
No Ashley. What's going on with Ashley?
Whoa, I was hot there. Okay. No Ashley tonight.
No Ashley tonight. Okay. Dave Backus is from Reading City Council. He's a candidate for Reading City Council. And we also invited Joshua Johnson and Mike Littow, but they are not here tonight. So we are going to play a little game with Dave and get some info from him about what's going on in the city of Reading and kind of get an idea of who he is and what he wants for our city.
This is going to be like Saw. Let's play a game.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
You're not leaving.
Trouble.
You're not leaving here tonight. This is our Halloween edition. All right. So, Dave, do you want to give us a little background info about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Dave Backus, and I'm running for Reading City Council. And a lot of my background focuses on nonprofit work within our community and, mostly in youth programs and helping kids out. We run a food bank program where we serve over 300 kids locally with food every weekend, because at school they're able to get their food, but when they go home on the weekends, they've been identified by staff as being without, and so we fill that gap and we try to help them. But in addition to that, we do education programs, we do all sorts of different things. I also run a business in town, so I'm a real estate broker, and I've got a team of four people. And yeah, so, I've been really involved in this community for a long time. We moved here, gosh, I don't even remember, 2010, something like that. So we've been here for 15 years and, dove straight in and really just made the roots deep. And yeah. So I'm trying to do more of that.
That's awesome. Yeah, as a teacher for 22 years, I can tell you we definitely have depended on our community to fill the gaps there with our kids when they don't have what they need. Because, our public school system can't fund everything, unfortunately. No. So thank you for that. Okay, so we're going to play a little game. And I can't remember the name of the guy we had on a couple months ago who did this. he did this kind of roadshow thing where he would go around and ask people or just kind of give them words and then kind of get their responses to these words. So we decided to play this little game with City of Reading thoughts and ideas. And so we're going to throw some words at you.
For sure.
And get your response.
Okay.
So first, rodeo grounds.
Ooh, rodeo grounds. We're starting off strong.
He's tall.
I've been present at all of the council meetings where we've been discussing, the rodeo grounds and this whole situation that we found ourselves in. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, I very much am in support of the rodeo grounds staying where they are, and having the ability to get a long-term lease for the rodeo so that they can be able to improve those facilities. I know they've got a lot of great plans for adding in more boxes and improving ADA access to all of the different areas. They managed to improve that for a couple of the different stands, but they can't get the whole complex. And so they need to be able to secure funding, and they can't do that without a long-term lease. So fully in support of that, and I think that the ad hoc committee that Joshua Johnson and Tanessa Audette started fails to meet the need of what that association wants. They're playing ball and they're playing nice. And so if you listen to Joshua or you listen to Tanessa, they're going to tell you that everything's going great and everything's fantastic. But that's because the rodeo doesn't want to put, they don't know who they're going to be dealing with after the election. Mm-hmm. Tanessa's up for the assembly. If she won, she may be gone. Mm-hmm. Joshua Johnson is up for election. He may not make it. There could be a whole different council that they're talking to. So they're trying to play nice with the people that are in control right now. But I have a feeling like the lease that is being dealt with right now is going to fall far short of what the rodeo's expectations want, what they want.
Mm, gotcha. So, well, I'm going to piggyback on what you said. This is not one of our words, but this is something that has come up over and over and over again with a lot of committees. This ad hoc committee, what is that all about? Why are we all of a sudden seeing all these ad hoc committees?
So, and again, you know, this is from my experience. I've chaired five different organizations. I've been president to multiple nonprofits. I can tell you, running organizations, when you need more in-depth knowledge on something, you can send something to committee, but it's usually, you know, one meeting or two meetings. They're going to research and they're going to bring back to the board and say, hey, this is what we found out and we'd like to proceed forward with this plan. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're already at three meetings with this ad hoc committee there, mm-hmm. The other thing that you can do with committees is you can send it there to die.
Right.
A good idea goes to a committee to die.
Yeah.
And, you know, what they're doing is they're trying to push this past the election mm-hmm. so that, you know, voters hear that they're supporting it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, meanwhile, they're just giving wordplay and they're not actually right. going to support the issue.
Like the logistics of it, right? Like how does that actually work? Like everybody has great ideas, but how do you put that into action?
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, like I said, the collaboration between the rodeo and the council, I believe, is a positive thing. But the fact that they're doing that behind closed doors, they're not really including mm-hmm. public input other than just the, you know, rodeo and the city itself.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to hear more community involvement in it.
Yeah. I think it's a way to bypass all those Brown Act things, too, when you send it to an ad hoc committee, right?
Well, actually, these are completely allowed through the Brown
yeah.
Act because it's only two council members that participate.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you get that third one that you run into those issues.
But you bypass all the rules that happen in a public meeting.
You bypass yeah. the conversation.
Yeah.
You don't hear the process of how mm-hmm. everything is being decided upon, and all of a sudden they're just going to come forward with a proposal and say, here's what we've decided,
right.
and expect the council to just go, thumbs up,
Yay.
Yeah, that's great.
Right. Okay. Next on the list is the riverfront.
So, yeah, obviously along the same lines there. So the riverfront specific plan, I took, I'm getting a picture taken of me, those that are listening while I'm laughing. So I took participated in all those small group discussions for the riverfront specific plan. And I did so because I wanted to, you know, hear the community feedback firsthand. I wanted to be able to, you know, really add context to this document that's going to be created. I do believe that it is a massive waste of money, $1.25 million put into this project. We could have spent, you know, we talk about, you know, the nonprofit work I do, 300 kids every single year. We spend that on just about $30,000. $1.25 million would set us for life. We'd be able to just operate on the interest mm-hmm. income alone. And so it's like, and what we spent that for was to get this document. It's going to sit on a shelf somewhere and Gather Dusk is quite honestly, we don't have the money to be able to improve those facilities.
What is the document? Like, what does that consist of? What did they do research on, like, the economical impact, the ecological impact, that sort of stuff?
Yes, both of those things.
Okay.
So they do look at the ecological impact. So part of it is an environmental study. So they supposedly get all the CEQA stuff out of the way, which can be a positive. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, $300,000 worth of plans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still $1.25 million. So it's still a tremendous waste. But, yeah, so it talks about recommended zoning, what types of businesses the community wants to see in those areas, or not businesses in certain areas. Like I heard very resoundingly of the northern section, they don't want to see businesses. No more businesses mm-hmm. up in that northern section. They want that to be an educational, an entertainment, and a nature area. And so I'd like to do exactly that because I think that's the best use for that land.
Gotcha. Okay, we're like 30 seconds away from break time. Is there anything that you want to say before we go to break?
Ooh.
About either of those things, rodeo grounds or riverfront, anything that really you want to stick before we go to break?
I think that's the crown jewel of our area. You know, the city of Reading having the riverfront is so important.
So beautiful. Yeah.
So I'd like to see that, you know, still, you know, we can see some improvement on the southern areas, and I could see that being, you know, a place where we have a nice restaurant or something, a river walk, something
mm-hmm.
over there. But for the most part, let's try and keep this as natural as possible.
Gotcha. All right. We're going to go ahead and go to break right now. Thanks. Watch me. Get the night away. My heart could be burning, but you won't see it.
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy. We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope, but that's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Ed Robertson inviting you to join us for the next edition of TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on KCNR. Please join us as we welcome Trip Wetzel, author of Norman Lear, His Life and Times. Plus, we'll bring you an encore presentation of our conversation with Linda Day George. That's TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, KCNR.
Hi, this is Linda Bott. Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
Ed Robertson inviting you to join us for the next edition of TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on KCNR. Please join us as we welcome Trip Wetzel, author of Norman Lear, His Life and Times. Plus, we'll bring you an encore presentation of our conversation with Linda Day George. That's TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, KCNR.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
We all got crowns, you need to come home.
He needs to calm down.
All right, welcome back to KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. We are here, Shasta Unmasked, with Dave Backus, a candidate for Reading City Council. Playing a little game with Dave, kind of word association. If you would like to call in and ask some questions, we are at 605-4567 or 605-4566. Please feel free to call in and ask Dave some questions. We're asking him some tonight anyway, but if you have some specifics, we'd love to hear from you. So welcome back, Dave.
Happy to be here.
We left off with talking about the rodeo grounds and the riverfront, and now we're going to go in deep, real deep. Bethel. Thoughts on Bethel.
Oh, let's my. Go. We are sure going straight
we're
in, aren't
going
we?
To the deep end.
So, you know, I'll start with the positive because it's good to start with positive. And, you know, Bethel is an amazing force within our community. They they have such an economic impact that
they do.
Is cannot be understated, especially in housing, you know, and to the negative, too. But we'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, in the positive effect, they're keeping our property values higher, which is, in effect, keeping tax rates higher, which is funding all of these projects that are going on in our areas. We're getting more improvement. They also bring diversity into our area as far as, you know, I've seen some of, you know, people, other countries and all these things coming to an area that otherwise they probably wouldn't have the draw. Okay, so now we've talked about the positive. And then now, obviously, we're sitting here with a council that is a 4-1 Bethel majority. And, you know, and the candidates, you know, Joshua Johnson had a chance to be here. He could defend himself if he wanted to be here.
Absolutely.
You know, he'll claim that he's not. He'll say that he's, you know, stirring or whatever his new church is. But, you know, when he was running 2 years ago, it was Bethel.
Right.
And Tanessa's starting to say, oh, I'm not super Bethel either. I'm not really that part of that.
Yeah.
But we've got a 4-1 Bethel majority. Julie Winter has no way of saying anything because she's a Bethel elder. We know that. And Jack's a part of the church as
Same
well.
With the school boards that are Moms for Liberty affiliated. They're trying to separate themselves from that now as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, Bethel's influence here, you know, with the Seven Mountain Mandate and talking about, their, you know, they need to take over media. They need to take over you know, governmental operations, family, you know, God should be in control of all of these things. We have a separation of church and state for a reason, and it's so that multiple religions can be able to exist all under one arena. And so for one organization, any one organization that is in control of the council, I disagree with. I don't think any organization should have control. The best councils that we've ever had have been different people from different arenas coming up with different options so that they can discuss it and come to a conclusion that, that really truly benefits the community as a whole.
Right. Which is better for everyone.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
Yeah. That diversity, they should embrace that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do we have a caller? Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
It's Jessica.
Hey, Jess.
Hey. So I just wanted to talk about the Bethel topic because I completely agree with what Dave said about mostly having representation on the board for all of the community. I think that that's really important, and I think that everyone that's on the board should want that themselves as well. So, and then the problem that I have with Bethel isn't the people, because I've met a lot of great people with Bethel, but like Dave was explaining, when you're called, when you believe that you're called by your highest power, that and they to enact an agenda for the religion, how do you separate that between what you're called to do in your religion and what you're called to do by the city for all constituents? So I have a hard time with that when it comes to people from Bethel serving in any capacity within government because I don't think they can differentiate between the two.
Right. Which is part of Project 2025, which everybody continues to say doesn't really exist. It's just some abstract thing that doesn't really exist, and nobody's getting on board with Project 2025. But all of these things come from Project 2025. the same with the agenda of Moms for Liberty. It's all Project 2025 affiliated.
Right. But the Seven Mountain mandate has been mm-hmm. long before Project 2025.
Yeah, right.
But it's kind of based on the same idea, like Dave was saying, that, you know, you infiltrate all these different groups. Mm-hmm. And the hard part is, you know, why infiltrating with God and spirituality, people can argue, isn't a bad thing. And so, kindness and love, it's all a good thing. But
I'll tell you a story about Bethel's giving arm, which was really kind of surprising to me. We had approached a school and we said, you know, we're trying to grow this program. We're doing food insecurity, you know, helping kids out.
Right.
And we want to be able to help you in whatever way. Let's sit down. Let's figure out a way. And so we were at a school that is a high need. You know, we obviously tried mm-hmm. to go triage, go to the schools that most need and then, you know, work your way back. I'm not going to UPrep to start with. They generally mm-hmm. have a population that can mostly take care of themselves. But if they ever need help, reach out. I'm happy to help. But mm-hmm. we're starting with the ones that have, you know, high populations that need assistance. So anyways, so we're in this room and we're talking and they go, well, we're already receiving, you know, some assistance from Bethel. They're filling this food pantry. They've got this thing. I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. That's no problem. We're happy to partner with another organization. There's no issues with us sure. working with them. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, okay, well, let's leave it there and let's go and talk. And so they call up to the Bethel and they go, hey, you know, we've got this other program. They want to work with you guys and kind of fill in the gaps where we need it. And Bethel responded back with, well, if they're going to give you help, then we'll go ahead and pull ours and we'll go do something else. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, that just says
it's
so much.
A very Christian approach.
So much. And I couldn't believe it. I really, yeah. truly was shocked. And so we actually took the initiative to say, we're stepping back and we're not taking care of the school. But, you know, on the down low, if you need help, just reach
right,
out. We're happy
yeah.
to fill up the need, you know. And so
that's
we had to kind of, like, act as, like, a shadow agent outside of it.
A political thing.
Yeah.
That feeding kids.
Yeah. How is that? How is that?
Yeah.
Anyways.
I don't know. Like, I've said this a million times on here. A lot of people in this area think that I'm super progressive, but I get so perturbed by that term, food insecure. It annoys me that we're not just saying kids are hungry.
Starving.
Kids
yeah.
are hungry
yeah, exactly.
and starving, and we need to feed them.
I agree.
Because I feel like that brings a lot more empathy than I am insecure about the food that I'm going to receive this weekend.
Yeah.
Well,
and it's because starving has a definition, which means that they're not getting any nutrition, and they
right.
are receiving nutrition at school. But
right.
let me tell you, I got stories from these teachers about Monday morning.
Uh-huh.
These kids would come in and they'd immediately just start ransacking
oh, yeah.
their fellow classmates'
yep.
lunch bags and all these things wherever they could find yeah. food. And they're just. Oh,
and a lot of times that ends in like middle school. They stop providing those things mm-hmm. after middle school. And I taught in community day where we had a lot of kids that were couch surfing or living in cars and things like that. And we would give them food, but it wasn't even nutritious food. It was like bags of chips and a top ramen for the weekend just because they were hungry, literally
yeah.
just hungry.
And that's a lot of like our program too. We do have a lot of, you know, granola bars and, you know, small things that are, maybe they're not the most nutritious things in the entire
mm-hmm.
world, but we always try to keep a fresh fruit inside that.
Mm-hmm.
We have some sort of, you know, more protein focused meal, tuna or, you know, for the young kids we do like, SpaghettiOs and, you know,
right.
Chef Boyardee stuff.
Yeah.
Something that's still something they can cook themselves easily without
yeah.
harming themselves.
Yeah.
We run into these problems of what we're going to do. But
mm-hmm.
anyways.
Yeah.
Those middle school, oh my goodness, they would think they're middle school kids.
Middle school cool.
Are the ones that need it the most, too, and the high school kids.
Yes.
I mean, they're the ones that need more energy even.
Yeah, and
yeah.
so in the high schools, we actually run it as a food pantry, and it's basically we give them full access. It's
oh,
you know
awesome.
We
yeah.
have a lot more trust in that level of you know age group, and so we're able to just say here, take what you need.
Yeah.
You know what you need. Take
well,
what you need.
And that's what's hard too is there's that embarrassment factor.
Yeah.
Once
and
they
we try
get into
the
middle
that.
School, they don't want to even like I've purchased clothing for some of my students. And brought it in like the Gap bag or the Target bag, and they absolutely refused to take it. Like they were so embarrassed by.
We actually used backpacks actual mm-hmm. real backpacks that we would hand out to the kids, because it's not that weird to see a kid carrying it, even though they had two backpacks. Well, mm-hmm. yeah, it's kind of weird, but you know, but they didn't, it's less off-putting yeah. than like, hey, I'm going to get this bag. But now we've switched out to a new system where they can actually stuff that into their existing backpack. We've managed to figure out a way of packaging it so that they yeah. don't have that,
yeah, you know, and even though, yeah, those little things make a difference when you're talking about, yeah, middle school and high school kids mm-hmm. where they're trying to figure themselves out and they're already embarrassed because they don't have the cool shoes, they don't have the cool clothes. And
they have to be responsible for yeah. ensuring they can eat for the weekend.
Yeah. That's a and lot. Sometimes responsible for their younger siblings. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. That's really sad.
Oh, yeah. We've got whole families that, you know, participate in these programs from kindergarten to high school, and we know who they are, and that's okay. We don't spread it, though. You
right.
know, it's, and we've actually had situations where people have found the way of getting out of it, and they've come back to us and go, we're very, very blessed, and we're thankful for everything you've done, but we don't need them anymore.
Right.
And we're like, yes, that's the point. That's
yeah.
what we're trying to work towards.
Right. Yeah.
You were trying to take that off your plate yeah. so that you could grow and become better, and, yeah. and here
yeah.
they are.
Politicizing that just seems insane to me, that there would be even a political line in between feeding kids or not feeding kids. That's insane to me.
Sometimes bureaucracy gets in the middle and people forget what
the cause is.
The cause
yeah.
is, yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's really sad.
Yeah. Okay, well, when we come back, I'll give you a head start. We're going to talk about the housing crisis.
Oh, so. Sounds good.
You've got time to do some research, and we're going to go ahead and go to break.
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy. We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. Right here on Free Fire Radio.
Hey guys, Dave Ramsey here. Join me and the Ramsey personalities as we give you the tools and motivation you need to win in the areas of money, career, and more right here on The Ramsey Show. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Find out what's happening in our town, our community, and our nation. That's Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m. right here on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot.
So
Welcome back to KCNR 96.5, 1460 AM. We're back here on Shasta Unmasked with Dave Backus. Please call in with some questions at 605-4567 or 4566. Dave would love to hear from you. Right before the break, we gave Dave a heads up on what we're going to talk about, which is the housing crisis in Shasta County. I mean, there's a housing crisis across the nation, but in particular, in our county, that's what we want to hear about and within the city limits. So what are your thoughts?
Well, Shasta County is definitely unique in that we've been hit with the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 punch. You know, we had the car fire, we had the camp fire, we had, you know, Dixie fire, we had Fawn fire. We've had all these different places that have been destroying our homes, limiting our supply. And then we've also had economic changes and policy changes, you know, from COVID and those other things that have forced people out of the cities, or I should say, not necessarily forced, but they chose to leave the cities based on those policies to come up to an area that was a little bit more free. And so they, you know, came here because we had low cost of living. We have beautiful outdoor areas. We just have the best of everything. And so we had these people come in and they just overrode our entire housing supply. And we cannot build fast enough. We don't have enough building going on. And truly the problem is that we're not building the right things. You know, we need to try to figure out a way that we can get some higher density units being put in that are not necessarily tied to low income standards, because there are people out there that just are unable to afford, let's say, a $400,000 house and that accompanying mortgage, but they also don't qualify on low income.
Right.
You know, and there's this odd area where they're just stuck paying high rents and they can't get out of that cycle. And if we can figure out a way to get some more areas zoned with some higher density that makes sense. I'm not saying I want to put, you know, a 400 apartment complex next to a single family housing tract. It needs to make sense wherever it goes. But I think that would really start to get us some easing on those prices, on those rental amounts. You know, and then we have, you know, Bethel coming in, and we've got, you know, these Bethel rentals where they're renting out individual rooms so that they can make even more money. Yeah. It's about money. It's not about providing housing for Bethel students. It's not.
Right.
And, you know, so they're renting out these rooms at $500, $600 a room.
So we end up with college town prices, when we don't even have a
Well, and they split that room into three people, and three people in another room, and three people in another room. And so you've got 9 people with a car, and they crowd the streets in front of these places. I had a constituent actually call. I shouldn't say constituent. Technically, I'm not elected yet. A citizen called or sent me an email, and we chatted and went back and forth about, you know, how do we solve this? And he wants us to, you know, license those as you know, businesses. And I'm like, okay, well, there's protections, unfortunately, that, you know, and this is where, you know, we may sometimes disagree. And that's fine. You know, I'm one of those people that we can find a solution, but
well,
it's not going to be that.
Well, some cities have limited how many, like, Airbnbs you can have, or how many, you know, rental properties you can have, or whatever.
Reading has as well.
Oh, they have.
Yeah, there's a short-term rental ordinance that they passed a couple of years ago that limits to a certain number, and I can't recall offhand what that is, but we're nowhere near it.
Right.
It's not the short-term rentals that are really causing this major problem in our area. We're talking about still long-term rentals, but we're talking about these, you know, overpopulated rentals.
Okay. Do we have a caller?
It's me again.
What's up, Jess?
I just heard the comment about it not, you know, we're not at the limit for short-term rentals, but one of the problems I see is the long-term rentals are subletting. And so it's being perceived as a long-term rental when really it's a short-term rental. And they're renting to Bethel students for a semester or two semesters. And so if we really took that into consideration, we would realize that we have a bigger problem than we think we do.
Makes it really hard for, like, my kids are all in that emerging family age, you know, and they're in their mid-20s. And I've got one off at college, and we're paying those college prices. But in Reading, you don't think that you should have to pay those college town prices, like when you're trying to start a family.
Especially when Bethel's not paying taxes.
That's the other thing.
I'd like to issue a little clarification. So when we say short-term rentals, we're talking about 30 days or less. Long-term rentals considered over 30 days. So I know that may not, you know, you think a year lease is long term, but the legal definition for a short term rental is 30 days or less.
Okay. So even if it's 2 months or 3 months.
Correct. So if it's a semester, that would be a long term rental, even though we're talking about months rather than years.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. So you end up with multiple families living in one home. Like I've got a kid living with grandma and grandpa right now. Another one who's barely making it with his family, you know, for an apartment, paying like mortgage prices for an apartment.
Oh, yeah.
And then how do you ever get out of that?
Yeah. Well, especially when your income, your debt to income ratios, you would never be able to apply for a loan and get that same amount of qualification. But somehow you have to make it work.
Right.
And I was there. Shoot, I did this early on in my life.
Yeah.
I remember having the low paying jobs and having to pay, you know, 60% of my income and rent.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was awful.
Yeah.
And I hate that people have to be in that scenario.
Right.
I'd like to help them find a way out of it.
Yeah. Especially people who don't have like a supportive family to be their safety net. Cause mm-hmm. I mean, I've bailed my kids out so many times as most parents do,
as most parents do.
Yeah. And you know, there are a lot of people that don't have parents or grandparents who can bail them out when things get tough and, you know, they don't have enough to buy the diapers or they can't pay their PG&E because they just paid the rent or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of scary because if anything were to happen to me, my kids would have some issues trying to make it on their own.
Also, I just wanted to mention one of the other issues is applying for rentals. So we have some rental companies in town that will collect $50 fees from every applicant and take, you know, 20-50 applications.
Yeah. And knowing that they don't need to take that many applications.
Yeah, exactly. Especially during the car fire time because, as you know, our house burnt down in the car fire and we spent about $500 on application fees in 1 week.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we would walk in there and there was a ton of people
looking
at the house and they would take all of our money.
Yes. It feels very predatory in that way, for sure.
And if you think about low-income people that can't afford $500 a month to apply for fees, then how are they even supposed to find an apartment?
And then how do you save up enough money to put a down payment on a home when you're paying $2,200 a month for rent?
Exactly.
Well, and when I say, you know, earlier I mentioned, you know, I'm talking about trying to find, you know, solutions that do not involve going into the low-income realm because I sit on the NVCSS Housing Board, and so we do a lot of low-income. And, you know, that's important. I'm not trying to belittle that in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have all these low-income units that are going in, and we've got wait lists 10, 12 deep on a lot of them, you know, but we have these low-income units, it's not encouraging people to go out there and become successful. It's you need to stay under this line or else you will lose your housing.
Yeah, yep.
And I want to encourage people to go out and be successful.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If we try and find these other solutions, higher, you know, should say more dense zoning, trying to get people, you know, into making budgets, sticking with them, and then progressing themselves forward, hopefully to the point where they can save some money and then get out of this rat race that, you know, they're stuck in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Okay, next topic kind of falls right into this, homelessness. Yeah, if you can't afford a home, a lot of people are, I mean, I have students that are living in apartments or living in motels. Yeah, exactly. It's very sad.
So, okay, that one was very cool.
Bad timing.
Yeah, I was like, not sure about that.
No, but that's literally me. I'm moving out this week, and that
that
is the experience.
It's yeah.
Like, oh, crap.
You're that guy.
There goes all my money.
Yep.
Wait, tell us more. What?
Yeah.
Do you have a place to go?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So you're not going to be homeless.
No.
Okay. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, but I mean.
Shay, your tent child.
Yes. Yeah. We had a student living in a tent on our campus at one point. Literally. A student. Yeah. So we don't. Yeah. I mean, we don't have enough social services. We don't have enough social workers to take care of the kids that we have that are homeless and whatnot. But even, I mean, this is what I've heard. You're not even designated homeless if you are living in a car. Is that correct?
So, and that's why I like the term unhoused, you know, because honestly, like, you know, homeless implies a lot of things. And but technically, yes, you would still be considered homeless or unhoused if you do not have a permanent residence.
Yeah.
A car is not considered that. But you know, for purposes of schooling and things like that, mm-hmm. it's not considered neglect. It's not considered anything right. that, you know, yeah. parents can be prosecuted for if right. they're living out of a car
yeah.
or even if they're homeless.
Right. Not that prosecuting them would help their situation.
No, it certainly would not. yeah. No. Yeah. Let's throw the parents in jail. That's going right. to solve everything.
Yeah.
But no, you know, homelessness in this community has been an evolving issue for the last probably 10, 15 years. We've mm-hmm. noticed just sharp increases in yeah. the amount of homeless here. And again, I sit on the NVCSS housing board and trying to solve a lot of those issues. You know, we were integral in assisting with the pallet shelter programs getting started up, that in United Way and a number of other groups. I'm not trying to take credit for something. Mm-hmm. But we've started to see these transitional housing programs to really start taking effect and helping.
Yeah.
I think only one person did not qualify, or I should say didn't finish the program with the original first go of the pallet shelter program.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those people have transitioned. They are in housing, permanent housing, or at least a more stable form that they're succeeding. And so I was at the groundbreaking today for Good News Rescue Mission. They're doing a 17-unit pallet shelter program out there. And I think that that's only going to assist. So all those little transitional housing that just helps someone who's on the street to say, okay, we're going to give you a safe little box. It's not mm-hmm. grand. It's not anything that you're probably going to really, you know, feel like is ever home. But you know what?
Right.
It's a safe place. It yeah. has a door.
Right. At least you're not living in a tent down yeah. by Wind River Casino.
Exactly. Yeah. Exposed to the elements and truly mm-hmm. in these communities where there is a hierarchy. It's almost nearly gang level. You know, there's
right.
they call themselves the family.
Well, it kind of has to be that way, right? I mean, how else do you survive on the streets?
Yeah, so they yeah. pool resources and that's a positive. They pool resources and help each other and all these things. But it's not ever going to help them transition back into our community.
Right.
And that's what we need to focus on. And so I think that we're doing a lot of very positive things in that. Mm-hmm. And they take time. You know,
yeah.
Homelessness is solved one person at a time.
Yeah.
It's through conversations. It's talking to people, finding out what their problems are.
Okay. We got to take a break. Thank you.
Sorry.
I didn't realize it was time.
.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Find out what's happening in our town, our community, and our nation. That's Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 AM, right here on KCNR. 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot.
All right, we're back for our last 10 minutes on Shasta Unmasked with Dave Backus, the only one who showed tonight.
It's nice to be the only one here.
Isn't it nice to be the only one? And we're so happy that you showed and you're willing to talk to us. So we're going to jump into some other, we're just going to throw some words at you. Extremism, your thoughts.
Oh, extremism. You know, honestly, I don't believe that we can have our society function when we have people operating at these massive extremes from each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to be a society where we would talk to each other. We would have polite conversations when we disagreed. And it just seems like there's no middle ground anymore that anyone's willing to give up. It's like they're viewed as a loss when they don't get their way. And it happens on both sides. This mm-hmm. is not a left or a right issue. It's both of them.
Right.
And, you know, we have to be willing to talk to each other and we have to be willing to compromise. obviously there are certain things that I disagree with compromising on, and that would be, you know, anything that infringes on the liberty of someone else. Right. You know, there are certain things we have to stick to our moral ground on. But, you know, when it comes to policies and, you know, how do we solve this issue, and, you know, and especially when we're dealing with super complex issues, we have to be able to talk to each other and be able to give up some ground so that we can be able to find a solution rather than just complaining about it, which is what we get a lot of right now.
Right. So how would you describe extremism in our country right now? In our county, sorry, not country, in our county.
How would I describe extremism in our county right now?
In our county. Like, how is it playing out in our county?
You know, I can give you a really good example of, you know, again, looking at the District 3 Board of Supervisor race. Mm-hmm. Mary Rickert and Corky Harmon, you know, they are not polar opposites of each other.
Mm-hmm.
They are truly not. You know, we're talking about two Republicans.
Yeah.
But we have one side that believes that unless if they meet this exact box,
mm-hmm.
then we need to kick the other person to the curb.
Yeah.
That would be what extremism looks like to me.
And that box is loyalism, right?
Loyal. Definitely to some degree. Yeah.
Loyal to whoever is in charge at the time. I'm not...
Stop it. Get some help.
Ben for the win.
Yeah, so, you know, it's the unwillingness to bend. You know, that's mm-hmm. really truly how I would define extremism, is when you say that my thoughts and my beliefs are so correct mm-hmm. that no one else can be considered.
Yeah. Yep, good points. Okay, got a few more here. Fentanyl.
Fentanyl's a problem.
How do we fix it?
Is that controversial to say?
No, definitely not controversial to say. How do we fix it? I mean, I've seen former students and some of my own kids' friends die from fentanyl overdoses. This is affecting every...
I make a joke, but only because, you know, when we have, you know, an issue that is so tough and so difficult, it's sometimes we go to humor in order to, you know, try to cope with it.
Yeah, that's why we have Ben.
And,
You know, the fentanyl's an issue, and so we should send $20 billion to a foreign war. That would fix it.
Thanks, Ben. Good advice.
Okay.
From the youngin.
One solution. We could certainly consider that. But, you know, what really, truly, whenever we're talking about any addiction, not just, you know, specifically fentanyl or anything, we're talking about people, they need to be able to raise their hand and ask for help. You can't help someone, or I should say it's incredibly difficult to help someone if they don't ask for help. Studies have shown this. It's very difficult to force someone into a drug rehab program and have them be successful at the end of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, their recidivism is drastically higher when it's a forced program. So that being said, I believe that asking for basically when they have, well, first off, we have to build the facilities. We have to build something where they're able to actually be treated at.
Yeah.
On a county level, mm-hmm. because what I'm thinking of and what I believe that a lot of people are approaching this with is that they want to see a county facility where someone has the choice. Okay, listen, you're going to go to jail for a long time and we mm-hmm. will lock you up for that time.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go into this program. And if you work this program that you choose to enter into, we will reward you with, you know, less harsh punishments, with, you know, easier ways to get back out into the world mm-hmm. and have freedom again.
Yeah. Well, there's also the issue of, like, regular kind of, I don't know what regular is, but, like, I guess I'm saying, like, common drugs that kids will use, like marijuana and cocaine, that they think is safe because they're not educated.
Or even tobacco. I mean, shoot, you know, tobacco use in our county is I just actually received a report a couple of days ago, and it is 3-4 times the state rate of especially youth using mm-hmm. tobacco in our county.
Yeah.
And that is unacceptable to me. We need to start cracking down more, and I believe the city of Reading has already started a program as far as they're trying to go into greater enforcement for tobacco use.
Yeah.
We're a little off topic talking fentanyl to tobacco because obviously they're night and day.
No, my point was the fentanyl getting into the drugs, like the party drugs that kids will do in high school and, you know, in college, where they think that they're doing a line of cocaine, or they think they're smoking a joint, and that, or they're getting a Percocet from somebody, and all of those things have the potential to be laced with
fentanyl.
Absolutely.
Anything that's non-regulated that comes from a source that we don't know how it was produced has that risk of having fentanyl, you know, contamination. And I've heard of it. It's happening in our community. It's
58 deaths in one year in Shasta County.
Exactly. You know, how do we solve that? There's not really a way to tell you the truth. You can't ever regulate illegal drugs. Yeah. They're, by definition, unregulatable.
Mm-hmm.
Unless if we went full libertarian and we decided to legalize all drugs, and then they had to be produced at certain facilities. But you know that's never going to happen.
That didn't work out so well for Oregon, from what I've heard.
Oregon and Mexico actually did a similar project. They made it legal for possession but illegal to produce.
Right.
None of that has been a free market solution, but anyways, that's neither here nor there. I don't think that'll ever be the case in any civilized country to do that.
I think the best thing we can do is educate, because educating, I was having a conversation with a teenager recently where we were discussing marijuana usage and how the teenager didn't think marijuana was that big of a deal and it made them feel better. And I was saying, but drugs make you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point.
Temporarily.
And, you know, a year ago you were saying you were against marijuana. Now you're smoking marijuana. So in another year, what's next?
Yeah.
You know, that's how gateway drugs work.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with fentanyl that, you're not going to die from a meth overdose or a weed overdose or a, don't think you'll die from a cocaine overdose, but fentanyl for sure.
You can die from both meth and cocaine overdoses, but
well, maybe a lot of it, but not a tiny little.
And supposedly,
like
science says you can die from a weed overdose too. But I have a hard time believing that someone would actively be able to continue
maybe
ingesting
from eating
it.
Too much.
Yeah, right.
I mean, at the end of the day, meth destroys people and kills them eventually.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between those drugs and fentanyl that where you ingest a tiny little amount and you're dead.
I hold up a fingernail as though that's going to illustrate it. We're talking about the microscopic doses of fentanyl that are
so
lethal.
Less than the tip of a pencil.
Lethal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
it's scary also, like, as a public school teacher to, like, we've been trained in how to give Narcan now, but, like, what kind of danger is that putting even our educators in if a student were to show up with fentanyl and it gets on something? And
that happened in Red Bluff a couple months ago where
a couple of teachers got really sick.
They had to go to the hospital because they had been
exposed.
Well, part of these opioid relief funds that the county's getting and other governments have already received is they're talking about having just vending machines that are free to dispense Narcan inside of them.
Oddly enough, I have a photo that I took just today.
They have it at the Rancheria.
At the Rancheria, they have a vending machine.
The other government I was referring to.
Oh, it has
government.
It's called the Harm Reduction Vending Machine, and it has a hygiene kit, newborn diapers, dental kit, xylazine test strips, vanilla protein shake, Sharps container, safe sex supplies, fentanyl test strips, protein bars.
I hope they follow this and see, like, you know, what the stats are afterwards. Like,
and
they're helping. Because it seems like it could be an unconventional way to maybe curb some of the deaths. But I would like to see how that plays out in the long run.
And it's sitting in the lobby, where patients sit.
I know my dad worked at one of the local hospitals for 30-plus years, and he said it was like zombies.
Hey, 20 seconds.
Then, it's time to go? Oh, my gosh. Holy smokes. Okay. Any last words?
Yeah,
David?
Please vote Dave Backus when you get your ballot in. And if you need more information, you can go to backdave.com. And I've got a website up there. I'm happy to talk to anyone. You can be able to reach out to me through that.
Yeah.
Or if you can go vote Dave at backdave.com and you can
send
me an email.
The Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.